Good morning. Nice to see you. So again, Jason invited me to talk a little bit about my experience with social media in the classroom. It's something that I've been, I don't know if I want to use the word passionate about, but it's certainly been something that I've been active with for at least the last 5 years. So as you take a point like this and stop and reflect, it's interesting to see how it's evolved and how it's been adopted. And we'll just talk about some thoughts. And along the way, since we're a nice little group here, if you have any questions, feel free to stop me and ask a question. You all have probably seen some of these infographics, something like this, the kinds of things that are happening very rapidly in a very short period of time on a daily basis. You know, our population continues to expand. The availability and accessibility to mobile technology continues to expand. And we're all connected in a lot of different ways. And there's a lot of different places that you can, let's see, does this have a little pointer on it? There we go. Yeah, there's a lot of different places that you can spend your time, and even on your mobile phone bill, it'll even tell you where you are spending your time sometimes as far as what your data plan is being used. If you have a family, it'll tell you where your kids are spending their time as well, and whether that's for the parents or whether that's for some of the marketing companies to figure out exactly where they should be spending time in the future, we'll sort of leave that a little bit alone. But it's out there, and there's lots and lots of data and lots of things that are happening very, very quickly. As I started to think about, you know, kind of where a lot of us tend to be at the university level in terms of teaching, it's kind of interesting. I have two children in my house, and our oldest just recently went off to college. And, you know, as I watched them the last 5 or 6 years of, you know, where they were, and as some of my friends have started to have children, and you watch just how they interact in the environment, and you can see it around here. People are bringing their children, and you know, we're way over here that, you know, it's pretty common for a lot of parents with young children immediately to be giving their child some sort of screen so that they don't have to deal with it or to entertain them or those kinds of things. But it's also interesting to see, as you talk to teachers, you know, what's happening in terms of technology in the classroom. And I think that, you know, quite honestly, a lot of us are still over here. You know, this is a comfort level. And, you know, I think that I oftentimes will default back to this because technology is great when it works. The chalkboard, the whiteboard, usually that works pretty well. But sometimes there's a disconnect between what the expectations are for these folks as they're traveling through and what they encounter as they get to the university. And there's a lot of unevenness in terms of, you know, instructors and what they're doing in the classroom. I think that, you know, it's something that we definitely need to address, and it's the kind of thing that, you know, I think on both sides you need to find that middle ground, because again, technology can be really great for engagement, but at the same time it can be a pretty strong distraction as well. And that's kind of what I'm indicating here with the young people there sitting there looking at their phones while the teacher's teaching. The other thing that we're seeing is, you know, some of our medical professionals are starting to look at, you know, how much time, you know, young people are spending with that screen in front of them and how that's affecting them. Everything from, you know, the bullying issues is a pretty common thing in schools to, you know, whether or not they're actually paying attention or whether or not they're actually engaging some of the content and retaining things. Again, you know, use of these mobile devices, more and more people have them. It's almost an entitlement or expectation that a young person would have something like that. So if our goal as educators is to engage and reach out and connect, you know, one of the easiest ways to do that certainly would be some of these social media types of platforms. There's lots and lots of things that are out there. You know, some things gain favor and then kind of go away. It seems like among the young people, you know, this guy right here, the Snapchat, seems to be really, really popular. I'm not sure that I fully get it. I mean, I do, but I don't. I think that from an educator standpoint, probably one of the biggest disadvantages is Snapchat. And, you know, for whatever reason, my wife has been granted access to my son's Snapchat account, but I have not, and I haven't requested it because I really don't want to know what an 18-year-old boy is doing. But it's the kind of thing that, as an educator, there's no legacy to it. You know, with something like some of these other social media things, you can go back and find something and maybe repost it a topic that, is pretty common from year to year. The kind of things like the Facebooks and everything else, and, I'm sure at your universities or your institutions, there is a social media office now, and, Facebook is still fairly popular. What I found is, the content on YouTube continues to get better and better. I found that in the last 2 years, I've used YouTube quite a bit more than I had in the past, primarily just to learn about how to fix something at my house or those kinds of things. And there's some really decent content out there. There's a company, I think, in San Luis Obispo, like iFixit or something, and they have all these YouTube videos that are free. And so their little thing is they'll let you have all the content you want on YouTube, but then you have to buy these little specialty tools from them to fix things. And it's not a bad business model, but my point being is there's actually a lot of good content, and YouTube classifies as part of our social media thing. If we look at our operating definition for social media, certainly, internet-based websites, services, practices, and this is what I like about it. They support collaboration. I got one of my colleagues here from Texas Tech. He's working on water issues for lawns. I'm working on water issues for lawns. Years and years ago, the only time that we would really connect would be to come to some of these meetings and exchange ideas. Now we can do it very, very quickly. I can post something that maybe one of my grad students is doing on Twitter, and he might see that. He might give me a phone call and say, hey, I just saw that you guys installed XYZ, and, we're looking at using this or that. And, it's a great way to connect very, very quickly and build this community, participate, share, all the other kinds of things. So social media is not going away is my point. The other thing is, as educators, we're looking at this and we're trying to figure out, how is this affecting how our students are or are not learning, okay? And one of the biggest things that I'm seeing with the students that are coming into our institution is they're bright, they're smart, they're motivated, sometimes they're even enthusiastic. I'm not sure how much they're actually retaining sometimes. And I think it could be a function of, just the technology that they've grown up with and the technology that they're using. So what we're interested in, again, as educators, is how can we engage them? How can we motivate them? How can we make them active learners? How can we make them lifelong learners? And I think that some of these technologies are part of that process of creating those folks. A few years back, this just got published about a year ago, but a few years back, myself and one of our colleagues in the turf science discipline, Dr. Kaminsky, we were doing the social media thing, and we were trying to figure out a little bit how students were utilizing some of these things and where maybe we should target some of our efforts. So we put together some surveys, and we published this paper in the Natural Science Education Journal. And so it's out there. It was published in 2016, but as you know, sometimes the publication process is a little slow. There's information in there. You're welcome to, it's open sourced. You're welcome to use it anytime, but again, some of that information is a little bit dated. We utilized a very narrow section of students, our turf science students that participate in the collegiate turf quiz bowls. And so we handed out these surveys and tried to figure out, how they were using social media at the time. And so what we did is we were interested in how they were using, what they were using, and also some of their behaviors towards using social media. So we did this in 2011, 2012, and so they were using, almost all of them were using social media. I would anticipate that this number is closer to 100% right now. We gave them a list of the different types of social media platforms that were available at the time and what they were using. A lot of them were using things like they were at times on Facebook. They were at times on things like Twitter. I think now you'd find them on Instagram, certainly almost all of them. That sort of 17, 18, 19-year-old student would be probably on Snapchat. But again, that's not the place that we can engage them very easy. Okay. The other part of this is, we've got this spectrum of faculty at the universities, and some are more open to change and some are less open to change. And this was in one of our newspapers there, and there are professors on my campus that are very strongly interested in possibly having a little bucket where you drop your mobile device as you walk in the door, because you're paying big money to come to Purdue University, and my content is really, really important, and I want you fully engaged for the whole 50 or hour and 15 minutes that you're going to be in the classroom. That's a pretty high expectation, and I guess maybe I'm just a little bit practical, but my attitude towards it is you know, you do what you got to do. It's your life. You be you. If it becomes a problem and starts to distract me and starts to distract the folks around you, then we'll have a talk about it. But there are folks that are a little more hard-nosed than me on campus. How do I incorporate social media in my life? I shared a little bit about that. I probably have, you know, I still go to Facebook once in a while, and we still post things related to our family so that my mom and, you know, people like that have an idea what the heck's happening around our house. You know, Twitter, I certainly am involved in that, you know, with our turf science community. You know, the YouTube kinds of things. I haven't really done any YouTube videos for myself because it's like, you know, I really don't want to watch myself. But at the same time, I think it's probably something I should pursue a little bit more. This Google Plus thing, you know, that got hot and then kind of seemed like that disappeared pretty fast. You know, I have a Snapchat account, and at times I've tried to figure out how to use it and, you know, see if there's some utility there for incorporating into education, and I'm not quite there. I do have a LinkedIn account, and that's a nice way to sort of connect to people and find folks. I was actually using that preparing for this conference because I had to try and find a speaker for one of the sessions that I had to organize here, and I actually found a Purdue alum that's local that, you know, hopefully is willing to show up today and do what they said they were going to do. But I use LinkedIn. Otherwise, I would have had to, you know, it was a real easy way to find someone and search down what we're looking for. So again, most of you all are probably familiar with Twitter. Everyone here have a Twitter account? Yes? No? Okay. You can find mine. It's at Big Turf Teaching, and it's a place that we post things, and I'll show you some of the kinds of things that we put out there. We have a lot of things that we could be putting out there, and you know, filtering your content is sometimes the hard part. Can you use this in the classroom? My personal opinion is yes. Whether or not the students will actually respond to it is a whole different kind of thing. You know, they sort of passively lurk, it seems like, and sometimes it's difficult to see who's getting stuff and who's not. But you need to think about how you're going to use it. Are you just going to go out there and simply share stuff? Are you expecting for engagement? I think that engagement expectation, you need to set that bar pretty low because, like I said, a lot of times people are just sort of lurking there. I look at it as a, you know, even a place that you can post some links that folks can go back and do stuff and find stuff. Do you want to have things open sourced or not? You know, we have our proprietary software on campus for course administration. We use Blackboard at Purdue, and you know, unless you have a course login, you can't get to the stuff. I tend to be a little bit more free in sharing things, but you know, you could put notes or those kinds of things out there. I don't know about the critical thinking aspect of that. You know, how much can you really get from the students in terms of the critical thinking part of it? And then, at least in our discipline, one of our big obstacles is trying to create awareness that our major even exists to some of the young people. When you say, you know, ag, or you say turf or something like that, where there's a lot of really rewarding jobs, you know, most parents and kids, they're still not quite there, but we keep pushing that out, and that's a national thing. You could throw in this whole Bloom's taxonomy, and you know, you all are fairly familiar with the traditional version of this. But in recent years, some folks have been a little bit creative and thought a little bit about how things like social media, particularly with respect to Twitter, you know, filter into this. If we're looking, creating, evaluating, analyzing, applying ideas, trying to understand things a little bit better. One of the disadvantages to the social media side of this is, a lot of students don't necessarily want to put a question out there because they're like anything in this room. If I called on you individually, you know, you're like, oh, you don't see me. I'm not here. And even though you're kind of invisible on social media, sometimes people don't want to put things out there. So it is something that again, used appropriately could be a really nice little learning tool here. How am I doing on the time part? Other things that we're looking at, this is my Twitter account, so Big Turf Teaching. Here's an example. You know, sometimes when we're doing stuff outside, we'll post pictures just to let folks know kind of what we're doing. Sometimes it brings back really nice memories of, you know, a student that was in class at one time and the kinds of things that they got to experience. You know, sometimes I'll give students a little bit of a heads up, you know, just in the morning, you know, hey, we're going to talk about this. There may or may not be a learning opportunity on it, but maybe it's the kind of thing you might want to look at your notes before you walk into class. But, you know, here I grabbed some plants around our horticulture building, and we were talking about annual bluegrass, and, you know, that's a pretty popular topic in my industry. Other thing is, you know, plant ID is a really important thing. Some students are really, really good at it. Some students not so much. Sometimes we have requests of, you know, what's this grass in my lawn? So we'll put things out there, and then someone sees that, and they can be directed back to our turf website as a program. Little kinds of things, of things that we sometimes do in the greenhouse for demonstrations. You can see some disease kinds of stuff. And again, just trying to keep pushing content out there, engaging people, letting them know that, number one, we exist, and number two, that we're trying to train some folks. This is a way that, again, similar kind of thing, but, you know, looking for some responses. You know, favorite game show, name that Sedge, and so you got three different ones there, and these are actually two of our alums from our program that happen to be following, and kind of went back there, and some of them have more interesting, you know, common names than others, but at the same time, at least I know that they're sort of listening, and if they were to have a question, that's a pretty quick way for them to get to us. This is an amusing one that we just did a few weeks ago, as we did a little fertilizer calibration thing. And what was interesting here, and unintentional, but on the left-hand side, so here I'm with my graduate student, and we just did the fertilizer spreader collection kind of thing, and we're looking at the spreader pattern here, and I took a picture just to show, you know, what a, you know, rotary spreader pattern might look like. But, you know, one of the industry folks out there, they had seen this gentleman here showing up in his Birkin socks, and I wish the student in socks and sandals the best of luck. So I guess the idea is, you know, subconsciously, maybe, you know, if you're going to go to an interview or something for his facility, maybe that's not the right attire to be wearing. But it was kind of interesting. People found that. Again, just the kind of thing. Sometimes we get some questions about, you know, as we get towards exams, and I get the same questions over and over each year, or someone will send me an email, and rather than answering the email, I'll say check social media, and hopefully someone else might even answer. So sometimes we get, you know, folks that are, you know, a little stressed out and have had you know, too many things going on, and they just don't want to study, and they're letting me know that, hey, maybe they're too stressed out. Again, marketing our programs, I think this is a big way, you know, showing that, you know, at least with the kinds of things that we do, there's a lot of outside and a lot of hands-on kinds of things. It's not just classroom, lab bench kinds of things. And sometimes I've even had high school educators or guidance counselors that somehow find me, and, you know, they mention, hey, you know, that's an interesting thing. Again, you know, taking folks to go and see some of our alums and just showing the industry that, hey, you know, we're here and you're there, and let's meet in the middle and continue to do a lot of good things. So sometimes we'll even engage content experts, you know, again, like Joey in Texas, or my friend John in Happy Valley, and, you know, ask them some questions about, you know, what's going on. And this is a way that I try and connect the students to things just beyond what's happening in West Lafayette. So occasionally I'll see students studying, you know, brings back some bad or good memories of, you know, things like, you know, a life cycle of apple scab or something along those lines, and, you know, share that, and, you know, students sometimes respond to that as well. At times, you know, we can use this as a way to, you know, share some informative things to students in industry. The other thing is, you know, sometimes students get real creative, and, you know, as we're approaching Halloween, if you're looking for that Halloween costume, you know, getting some synthetic turf and creating a coat of grass isn't a bad thing. But it's nice to see that our students are fairly enthusiastic about what they do. Like I said, you know, one of the things that I've found that I've engaged a little bit more in recent years is the content that's out there in terms of YouTube. And there is some really nice things there, and I'll give you an example of how I did this. I'm using this today, is because I'm gone this week, this is actually an exam week. And so I gave students a take-home section, you know, that I know they're all going to work on together. But as part of that, I went and found some of the topics that we were talking about in class, and I directed them towards some YouTube kinds of things. I mean, like, who would not want to know about the Poa toupee over here, you know? But this connects people from West Lafayette to a gentleman in California, you know, Dr. Larry Stoll, who's very, very good and has some very, very good content. And we just spent about a month talking about annual bluegrass, but annual bluegrass in the Midwest, but annual bluegrass in California is a very, very different kind of thing. So hopefully encouraging them to broaden things and realize that, you know, hey, if you ever got a job in California, there is an expert out there that can help in addition to what you find there. The other thing I found as far as the YouTube kinds of things, you know, with my own children, is all these Khan Academy videos are really, really pretty good. And you're seeing some of these middle school students, high school students going to this basically as, you know, full-time 24/7 tutor four things that they need. And this might even be a way, if you wanted to do something at a higher level, send them to this and say, hey, you guys should have known this coming into the classroom. If you don't know it, go out to Khan Academy, and we're going to talk about it at this level, and that content's already there, so you can make them personally responsible for things. These clicker kind of things, those have kind of gone a little bit away at Purdue. Other institutions seem to still have those. Purdue kind of internalized this about 3 years ago with this hot seat application, which is unique to the university, and you can respond using your mobile device, and you can log in and do all those other kinds of things. It's essentially the same thing as like a Twitter feed or something, and what some of the big lectures do is you might have someone like myself that's the main person teaching, and then you might have someone like Jason over here that is sort of monitoring the feed, and he might actually write something down, hey, you know, we've had three questions about this, can you clarify that? Because you'll see the multiple screen things going, and it can be kind of confusing for the person that's at the podium, but they're using those kinds of things, and it's kind of interesting. This seems to be the new thing as far as the middle school, high school educators, is this Flipgrid thing. Has anyone heard of Flipgrid? Yeah, one person. Okay. But if you look, it's really, really popular. The fifth grade up, 5 minutes, 2 minutes? It's really, really popular, and you look at over here, now we got social learning for everyone. Okay. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, and I haven't used it at all. You know, I've just sort of watched it and watched some of the tutorials because I have some friends that are using it in middle school and high school. And the idea is that, you know, okay, let's just say we have these folks here that we're going to give an assignment, and rather than me as the instructor having to read the responses, is they can post these little videos, okay? None of the students are reading. Okay, let's be honest here, all right? And they're going to make their little three-minute video, and they're going to post it to this thing, and supposedly everybody's supposed to be social, and we're all supposed to hold hands, and it's supposed to be really exciting. Well, the reality is, what I know is I still have a lot of students that are real quiet, okay? And they don't necessarily love this whole collaboration kind of thing. And so forcing them to do those kinds of things, you got to tread lightly is sort of my take-home message with that. Other stuff that we found, and I would say these data are probably pretty realistic, is, you know, students probably still feel like they're getting about the same amount of work done, but they don't know how much work they would have gotten done without social media, so it's kind of hard to gauge that kind of a question. This idea of, you know, are these mobile devices a distraction in the classroom? Jason, I saw you texting over there, okay? It didn't distract me, though. The reality is that's the world that we live in. I think that most of us are multitasking, and it's just kind of the thing. And I don't know how to deal with this. You know, should you have something like this? I haven't gotten there yet, but there have been times that I've been tempted. You know, the other thing about this is, you know, we've got students that are engaging, we've got students that are doing lots of things, but we're not really helping them to figure out how to actually write. You know, I mean, social media, it's short little bursts, it's a little video of, hey, look at me, I'm on top of the Eiffel Tower. It's all those other kinds of things, but the written word thing continues to still get lost. And we really need to understand as we age and this next group of young people comes behind us, is they don't know what they don't know. You know, and you know, this is a classic example of, you know, some of our millennials that if you asked them what a phone number was, they probably couldn't remember too many phone numbers. Maybe when they were little kids, they had memorized their house phone. But it is an interesting kind of thing. The other thing for me and why I continue to stay motivated to keep up with technology is I think it's a little bit top down at our university. This has just happened this fall. Is our university, the Board of Trustees, has purchased an online university. They were way behind in online delivery. So the best way to ramp things up is purchase something that is a already existing kind of thing. So we're trying to figure out what the Purdue University Kaplan thing is going to look like. But, you know, our Board of Trustees and all the bosses that are at a much higher pay grade than me are going to be pushing this pretty hard. So social media, I would expect, would be part of that. And the idea is that they're going to start delivering full degrees from Purdue University over the next 3 to 5 years online. Now, whether that virtual degree is the same as the resident degree, I mean, those arguments have been happening for a very, very long time. But it's happening, and I better stay engaged if I'm going to stay into that. So, end of the day, can you use it in the classroom? Absolutely, positively. You got to think about what you want to do with it, though. It's real easy to just post things, but you know, posting intentionally is a lot better than just posting randomly. So, downsides: the technology keeps changing, so you got to be adapting and learning. But I think if you want to engage this group of students that's coming into the classroom, these young people, their expectations are that you have all this stuff and you know your stuff, because they knew it, right? But they don't have the distractions that adults have. So with that, I'll call it done and look forward to hearing what other people have to say. Did I hit it, Jason?
Yeah, we got time for maybe one or two quick questions.
Yes.
I just attended a seminar at my school about...
Just a note, there's free water up front.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How not to be a helicopter professor.
Oh.
And one of the things was you're not supposed to connect with your students on social media. So because they said that that's crossing a boundary that needs to exist between professors and their students. I was wondering what your thoughts were on that idea. Has anybody ever really crossed the line by connecting with you on social media?
Student-wise, no. You know, and I've never felt bullied or threatened on social media, and I don't know that I've really put myself in that position. You know, and I've never had a student sort of lash out, why did I get a C on that day? You know, but I'm a softy anyway, so... But it's an interesting opinion, and I think our university has some sort of policy on social media, but I don't know what it is. So.
One last question.
From Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. I was just curious how this works to kind of cultivate that next generation of workers. Do you get feedback from them when they go out to the job? Do they help support kind of your own little learning community?
You know, I work in a unique commodity and industry, but I would say yes. I mean, they know where we are, and, you know, people seem to want things faster and faster. And, you know, our alums are a pretty social kind of group. They're weird. They're in a public setting, they're kind of quiet, but in this kind of setting, they'll get kind of crazy with each other. And it has, I think, connected people. Maybe that's a better word. And it's helped me to stay connected, too. And sometimes you'll find out that, hey, Bill just changed jobs. Well, that's interesting, huh? But then you might know somebody that can help to, you know, maybe it's an advancement and there's somebody that's appropriate for that next position. So it's kept me engaged. So it's not a bad thing. So, Jason.
All right.
Thank you.